Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
What a fun day for the Cardinals. Let's talk about it. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, June 15th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Today on the show, some waiver wire hitter debates, pitcher bounce backs, the worryometer, and much more. But let's jump right in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, Chris, you made an awesome analogy before we started about taking the low-hanging fruit as your oh, my goodness gracious player of the night. Who is that player, and what is the analogy?
Yeah, when we log on, Frank is always like, so what do you guys want to do for oh, my goodness gracious? And usually if there's like an obvious one, there's kind of like nobody wants to step up and be like, well, I'll do it. Because, you know, you don't want to be the guy who takes it. And what I've realized is this brings me back to when my friend was working at Olive Garden as a waiter in college. And he told me that their policy, and I don't know if I'm like, you know, putting anybody on blast here, so I won't say any names. But he told me their policy was with the never-ending breadsticks that they bring one extra breadstick than the number of people at the table. Because their research, I guess, has shown that when there's just that one left, people are less likely to grab it. And people are overly deferential. And so that helps them reduce overhead on the number of breadsticks that they have to give out. And me, I love breadsticks.
Yeah.
And I also like Tyler Mahle and the way he performed today. So I'm going to take Tyler Mahle for my oh my goodness gracious player of the day. He had one of the best performances of any pitcher, period. This season, 9 shutout innings, not a complete game, but 9 shutout innings, 12 strikeouts, 2 hits allowed, 3 hits allowed, no walks against the Diamondbacks today, 18 swinging strikes on 119 pitches, 11 of them coming with that fastball. And Tyler Mahle's been really good for about the last 6 weeks. He's had one really bad start in his last 8. That was when he gave up 8 runs in 4 innings against the Cubs, but other than that, he's given up, if you take that start out, he's now given up 9 runs in 7, 9 runs total in 7 of his last 8 starts. That covers, 45 innings over those 7 starts. So he's averaging 6.5 innings per start. He's been quite good. He's got, doing the math on the top of my head, let's say 54 strikeouts in those 45 innings. This is pretty much what we were hoping and what we were expecting Tyler Mahle to be. I know he's been kind of up and down, but yeah, I think Tyler Mahle, pretty good.
Yeah, and I've been looking for, you know, what's the reason for this turnaround. I did notice in his last 2 starts where he's had double-digit strikeouts in both of those, he's throwing the slider less, and that is his highest batting average against pitch so far this season. So opponents are batting over 300 against that. I noticed that he's, you know, throwing more cutters, throwing more fastballs, and it seems like that's helped him the last 2. But as you mentioned, I mean, this kind of he's been pretty good for the past 6 weeks or so. And we're talking beforehand, yeah. Scott, and you basically said, "I'm in. I'm back in on Tyler Mahle."
Yeah, I was fortunate enough in one of my 12-team points leagues that somebody dropped Mahle, and I was fortunate enough to get him for a low bid. His fastball itself has always been a good pitch. He kind of came to the majors. That's all he had. And it seems like he's been leaning into that again lately. A lot of whiffs on the fastball specifically. Total whiffs, 15-plus in 4 straight starts, all of them quality starts. So, you know, I don't know how long he can sustain that approach necessarily, but we thought he was good coming into the year, and he's looking like it now.
Yeah, his four-seam fastball has been a very good swing and miss pitch for him in the past. It's actually arguably been a better swing and miss pitch than his slider, which you don't really see all that often. So, you know, today it was primarily fastball slider. He actually, or splitter, he only threw the slider seven times today. And generally speaking, you know, I think pitchers should throw sliders more. A lot of guys have good sliders. Tyler Miley doesn't really seem to have a good slider. So, I think this is a viable strategy for him.
All right. Yeah. I mean, he's a very unique pitcher in that way. It like most pitchers, I think he will be better when he keeps the walks down, which he did in this start, his first start with zero walks on the season. But Tyler Mahle is back up to 83% rostered. Could be out there in some of the shallowest leagues, but more often than not, he is rostered. And if you have him, I think you should feel pretty good about it. All right, Scott. Oh, my goodness gracious for you from Tuesday.
Well, the other low-hanging fruit could have been Miles Michaelis, I guess, but I'm going to leave that for the worms, and instead I'm going to go with Nate Lowe, who had another great game on Tuesday, 3-for-4 with a ding-dong. His past eight games, Nate Lowe is batting .352 with six homers, 18 games, looking great during that time. Now, what's interesting about this is when you look under the hood for Nate Lowe during this incredibly hot stretch, it's not like he's impacting the ball especially well. His average exit velocity and hard hit rate during this 18-game stretch are actually lower than his season averages.
Which aren't all that good, I'll point out.
They're decent. They're about 60th percentile, 50th, 60th percentile. But what has changed for him during this 18-game stretch is launch angle, and specifically his ground ball rate, very, very low, 38.3%. A lot of line drives, a lot of fly balls, and it's leading to a lot more production. If that's the result of in a change in approach for Nate Lowe, I think that's very, very encouraging. You know, if it was just, oh, he's clobbering the ball right now, okay, he's hot. But if he's done something with his swing to make it less ground ball-y, then like this might just be the natural outcome. I'm not saying he's going to hit .350 forevermore, but he could be a productive first baseman. He hits the ball hard enough that he could be that. I mean, obviously he was that in the minors, and we were excited about him when he was first breaking into the majors. So I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. He's only 42% rostered.
Mm-hmm. And something I read about in the offseason is that the Rangers brought in either a hitting coach or a hitting instructor from the Giants organization. And in recent years, the Giants have done great work with getting the most out of their hitters and improving launch angle. We saw it last year with Brandon Crawford. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're kind of going through a similar approach right now with Nathaniel Lowe. And during that stretch, Scott, you mentioned the ground ball rate is down, not impacting the ball all that hard, but the barrel rate is up. It's like 15% during that 18-game stretch, and I would imagine it only went up more after Tuesday's game, where he did hit his eighth home run overall. I was going to save this for later, but you know, since we're on the topic of Nathaniel Lowe, some waiver wire hitter debates, and would you rather have Lowe or Luke Voit, who is also kind of coming around. Since he's come back off the IL, he's hitting .254 with seven homers, 22 RBI, lots of line drives. Chris, who would you rather have, Lowe or Voit?
It's Voit pretty easily for me. We've seen Voit be an impact player in the past. I don't know, like Luke Voit's 1,100 plate appearances into his major league career, and he's basically been a 107 to 113 OPS plus guy his entire, every single season. I just think like, he's probably just a decent hitter, whereas Luke Voit has shown serious potential to be more than that.
He hasn't done it so far this year, right? But obviously he's shown that potential in the past. Luke Voit has. Yeah. You know, maybe there's this new level that Nathaniel Lowe can get to. Scott, what do you think? Lowe versus Voit?
You know, I think I'd be inclined to take the shot on Lowe right now. I know Voit's been hitting some home runs. The strikeout rate is still astronomical.
Yep.
He's got a, even during the stretch since he returned from the IL, if he's going to strike out at this rate, it's going to be hard for him to make make a fantasy impact. You know, if you're forcing me to keep one maybe for the rest of the season and never make a move again, then maybe I would lean Voit, but I don't know. I kind of feel like you can leave Voit out there right now and ride the hot hand in Nate Lowe, see where it goes.
All right. Well, hey, you know I'm going with my guy Nate Lowe as well. I do like Voit. I like what he's done recently. He's hitting the ball well, but I just think there might be something, a new level that Nathaniel Lowe can get to. I will also point out Nathaniel Lowe's career against lefties. He has been better against lefties in his career than he has against righties as a left-handed batter. So I don't think he's in danger of any kind of platoon split or playing time concern. Again, that is Nathaniel Lowe. Oh my goodness gracious, for me, Paul Goldschmidt, which will kind of transition into all of the Cardinals and just a huge day for the Cardinals and Miles Michaelis one out away from a no-hitter. It's so sad. But Paul Goldschmidt, doubleheader, hits three home runs across both of those games. And he also had, I believe it was 6 hits total, 8 RBI, and he's now batting .349, 16 home runs total. His last 162 games, Paul Goldschmidt, .333 batting average, 40 homers, 12 steals, 116 runs scored, 126 RBI. So far this season, leaning into a fly ball heavy approach has helped with the power so far. He has just been amazing. And this was, today was the first time, well, I guess yesterday when you're listening to this, Tuesday, where I actually considered moving Paul Goldschmidt ahead of Freddie Freeman in the rankings. I don't know that that really means anything to anybody, but what do you think about that move? Have you guys considered it at all?
Well, I actually have him behind Pete Alonso as well, who's having a great start to the year himself.
Yeah.
Not as good as Goldschmidt. There aren't many hitters who are off to as good a start as Goldschmidt. I could see it. I could see doing it. I'm a little skeptical. I mean, obviously he's hitting 348, so, you know, goes without saying, I guess, that I'm skeptical of him sustaining that. But he is somebody who's drastically outperforming his expected stats at a time when you would expect most hitters to be underperforming their expected stats because it's still based on the 2021 environment as opposed to how the ball is played this year. So that in and of itself, I think, is reason for skepticism. He's not hitting the ball as hard on average as he did last year. I'm not saying Paul Goldschmidt is going to crater or anything. He's going to be a stud. But his best has probably already happened. You know, I would have said that yesterday, and then he just had this game, where he hit three home runs between two games. But I nonetheless think it's true. So, you know, if you want to rank him ahead of Freddie Freeman, if you want to rank him ahead of Pete Alonso,
well, that's fine. I guess my thing there is, to what end, right? Like, we're not drafting,
right?
You know, so like, unless someone's trading Freddie Freeman for Paul Goldschmidt, well, which
hypothetically.
Hypothetically,
that's the question you should ask yourself. If I had Paul Goldschmidt, would I trade him for Freddie Freeman? If I had Freddie Freeman, would I trade him for Paul Goldschmidt? And I think in both scenarios, I'd say no, just because I'd rather stick with what I have if I'm not sure I'm upgrading. That's just psychologically that works better for me.
You know, like it's the exercise that we do, but it's also like, if you prefer Paul Goldschmidt to Freddie Freeman, I think that's fine. I prefer Freddie Freeman. I think the longer track record is safe. But, you know, but like, only one hitter has a higher WOBA over the last calendar year than Paul Goldschmidt. You guys want to guess who it is?
Aaron Judge?
Nope. He's fourth.
Jose Ramirez?
WOBA.
Jose Ramirez is eighth.
Bryce Harper.
The only player with a higher WOBA than Paul Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt's numbers over the last calendar year, I believe he leads, he's second in home runs or runs plus RBI. He's got 36 home runs, 111 runs, 117 RBI, 11 steals, and a .328 average over the past calendar year. That's pretty bonkers.
He is awesome. I started thinking today, I was like, is he a Hall of Famer? I don't know, man.
Well, this has gotten him back on track. Somebody mentioned to me on Twitter, I thought it was a great analogy, because a couple of years ago, you know, for a stretch of a couple of years there, Paul Goldschmidt looked like he was in steep decline. Like, we couldn't even count on him as a reliable fantasy option anymore. And somebody called him the Justin Verlander of hitters in that way. Because if you'll remember, there was a stretch when Verlander was still with the Tigers, multi-year stretch where it looked like he had lost it. So, you know, if Goldschmidt has that kind of finish to his career, then yeah, you could certainly see him being in the Hall of Fame.
Goldschmidt and Alonso, by the way, both top seven players overall in Roto this season. Goldschmidt's averaging 4.1 fantasy points per game, so he's a little bit better than Alonso in that format, but both guys have been absolutely awesome. So if you drafted them in your whatever fourth, fifth, sixth round, something like that, you love it. I did bring up the Goldschmidt versus Freeman debate because we got an interesting email on Tuesday from Andrew, and he had this to say about Freddie Freeman. Some of the reporting from The Athletic suggests that batted balls in this year's environment with the new balls fare significantly worse when hit to the opposite field. Does this worry you with a hitter like Freddie Freeman? I've been waiting on the power to come with warmer weather, but with his opposite field approach, am I going to be disappointed? His max EV of 112 and 79th percentile average exit velocity look decent, but his second hardest hit ball is only 108. Is that enough exit velocity with this year's ball to be a contributor in home runs? In 5x5, where his plate discipline and doubles don't get me much, is it worth chopping him for an SP1 like Zach Wheeler or Carlos Rodon? And that's regarding Freddie Freeman. I hadn't looked into this, and you know, kudos to The Athletic, whoever's reporting it. I hadn't noticed that, so I would probably have to do more research on it, but it sounds like something that might carry some weight.
I assume that's the cause explaining the effect, right? Like, balls hit to the opposite field generally aren't hit as hard, don't carry as far.
Right.
So, well, you know, I we're clearly seeing that Freddie Freeman is hitting the ball still very hard.
Yeah, I think one thing that this might be referring to is some research on the effect of side spin on batted balls, because I would assume that balls hit to the opposite side have more side spin slash, you know, more of a slicing effect. You know, just based on the physics of it. And so, you know, if the ball is curving, it's going to have to travel further to go further.
Yes.
Okay. If you get my drift.
Okay.
It has to cover more ground to get to the same distance. And so I think that's possibly what it's referring to. But if you look at his spray chart from, you know, 2021, the majority of Freddie Freeman's home runs did go to center or to right. So I don't necessarily know if that's an explanation. I think, you know, we saw a stretch like this last season from Freddie Freeman where he wasn't hitting for power, and I think he's going to be fine. You know, he just has such a long track record. Like, it is possible that he won't be a high-end power source, but like, I think at the end of the season, you're probably going to look at Freddie Freeman and he's going to have 30 plus home runs and a 300 plus average.
Now, if it doesn't happen going into next year, that might be a...
Sure.
I might buy that more as an explanation and you know, feel kind of dumb that I didn't put Goldschmidt ahead of him at this point. You know, even now, I'm wondering, like, what's really the downside of moving Goldschmidt ahead of Freddie Freeman?
Well, there's no downside. Like that. That's what I'm saying is like there's not really any downside to either one. Like it.
Yeah,
I can see.
There's a downside to not moving Goldschmidt ahead of Freeman.
Well, there's a downside to moving Goldschmidt ahead of Freeman. Is that you're reacting to a really, really good 2 month stretch from Goldschmidt.
But it's not a really good 2 month stretch. It's a really good year long stretch.
That's true.
Sure. But like Freddie Freeman is still one of the 15 best hitters over the last year. And so the last year thing is arbitrary. Like that is an arbitrary endpoint. And there's probably some.
Are you sure he's one of the best 15 hitters over the past calendar year?
Yes. He's 12th in WOBA.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think it makes sense. And if you look at the larger sample of really the past 5, 6, 7 years, Freddie Freeman has, you know, outplayed Paul Goldschmidt. I'll point out
Freeman only has 21 home runs over the last 365 days. So there could be something there, but
mostly because of this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he had 16 in the final 100 games or whatever last season, which is a good but not great pace.
Last point on this theory, Freddie Freeman does go to the opposite field a lot. He's doing it way more this year than he ever has. 34% opposite field, according to Fangraphs. That's 27% for his career. So if you assume that just kind of evens out to where he's been at for his career and he just starts pulling some of these fly balls more, I think we should see more power from Freddie Freeman. I think
there was something like that last season around this same time where Freddie Freeman was hitting the ball hard but just wasn't pulling the ball as often. I'm pretty sure I remember...
He got off to a really
I might have even written about that last year.
Like the first 2 months of last year, Freddie Freeman was... Like he was hitting... I want to say below 250 even. So yeah. Like he's off to a better start this year than he was last year.
He was hitting for power, but yeah, not as much.
And he's running too. He's got 5 steals. It's the middle of June. It's pretty interesting, but yeah, Dodgers, I guess he has that luxury. Let's get back over to the Cardinals. Miles Michaelis, we mentioned, I mean, one out away from throwing a no hitter against the Pirates. He goes 8 2/3, one hit, one unearned run, one walk, 6 strikeouts. He had 11 swinging strikes on 129 pitches. Lowers his ERA to 2.62 for the season. And as I've mentioned multiple times, like I think just finally getting healthy for Miles Michaelis, and the control has been immaculate, under 2 walks per 9. I think that helps Miles Michaelis perform to this level. You know, not that I expect him to remain a sub-3 ERA guy, but Chris, I feel like you haven't been around recently whenever we've talked about Michaelis, so do you have any thoughts on him?
I'll put him in the Martin Perez category.
I don't know if that's good or bad useful. Anymore, Chris.
I think Chris has been consistent about.
Yeah, he's a fringe. Like I think he's fringe useful against the right matchups. Yeah, Arizona's a pretty good matchup.
Well, he was going up against the Pirates.
Sorry.
But it's also a great matchup.
Also, so, even a better matchup.
Yes, your point remains. But I think for the most part, yes, someone who pitches to contact. Yeah, I don't want to downplay. This is obviously an awesome performance. But yeah, he's probably
there's
more
just
of
only
a,
so much upside yeah. with this type of pitcher.
More of a streamer than anything. Scott, I wanted to get back to the bullpen, right? I love yesterday we make these proclamations. It's like, yeah, we've got the Cardinals bullpen figured out. Game one of their doubleheader. Got him. Ryan Helsley pitched in the 8th inning with a 2-run lead. He faced the heart of the Pirates lineup, 2, 3, and 4. And then Giovanni Gallegos pitched in the 9th, and he picked up his 9th save of the season. I don't know if we learned anything more or less over the past couple days. Scott, it's just kind of confusing.
We've learned Ryan Helsley is not the closer.
Fair, yeah. I mean,
emphasis on the.
I don't think they have a closer, for what it's worth, I guess.
It's a tandem. It's two guys. Advantage Helsley still, I would say, because as I brought up yesterday, Helsley had gotten 4 saves since Gallegos' last one. Mm-hmm. But as I also pointed out yesterday, there had been times during that stretch where Gallegos followed Helsley in games that, you know, where there were no save situation. This is why I'd be hesitant to drop Gallegos. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's a 60-40 Helsley situation. That's where they are, I think.
All right. So, look, if you play in category leagues, I think hold on to either one if you need saves. Both Giovanni Gallegos and Ryan Helsley, they both play on a great team, obviously, and I think there will be an abundance of save opportunities. Let's get back into waiver wire hitter decisions. And we mentioned Luke Voit versus Nathaniel Lowe already. And I have another fun one. Michael Harris, he's been really impressive so far with the Atlanta Braves being promoted from Double A. He goes 3 for 5 on Tuesday. Scotty. Shout out to those Braves, man. They just cannot stop. They are awesome right now. And Michael Harris hit his 2nd home run, 3 batted balls over 100 mile per hour average exit velocity in this one. And he's 49% rostered. Michael Harris or Alec Thomas, another fun outfield prospect who's been solid so far. 270 batting average, 5 homers, 2 steals over his first 34 games here. And both players are under 60% rostered. So Scott, we'll start with you. Would you rather have Michael Harris or Alec Thomas?
I'd rather have Harris. I think, since he made that swing adjustment, lowering his hands, he's, I think he's shown more upside than Thomas. But I don't know that either are quite like in the must start range yet. Harris is, you look at Harris's Statcast page, it's still pretty uninspiring. Now, I'm wondering how much the exit velocity has improved since he made that change, which roughly coincides with since he heated up. I probably should have looked that up before the show because I don't think I can look it up on the fly here. But you mentioned today, he had 3 balls hit 100 miles per hour or harder. And I feel like we've heard that a lot with him lately. A lot of high quality contact events from Michael Harris. Ground ball rate is still way too high. Again, I wonder how much that's changed since he made the swing change. But, you know, we've seen him steal a couple bases, now back-to-back days with a home run. The strikeout rate is respectable for a rookie. And, you know, I think we're to the point now where I'm sure he's a lot more available than Thomas, right?
Michael Harris is 49% and Alec Thomas is 58. So it's pretty close.
Yeah. Okay. So it at least should be about even between them.
All right. Fair enough. Chris, what do you think? Michael Harris versus Alec Thomas. I think there are a lot of similarities so far. They both hit a lot of ground balls. They're both very fast. Obviously, Harris's lineup is better, but Thomas makes more contact. So you know, there's a little give and take for each of them. Which one would you rather have?
I think I'd rather have Thomas by a hair, but I think I'd rather just have both, especially in a five outfielder league. Like, sure. If they're both out there in one of my leagues, you know, anybody who's got 20-20 potential, which I think both of them, you know, in a best case scenario could, I'll take them on my team and just, you know, figure it out later.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. In shallower leagues, I have another one here in the outfield. Andrew Vaughn or Christopher Morel, who we've been hyping up recently. Both are right around 72-73% rostered. Andrew Vaughn had a big game on Tuesday where he went 4-for-4. He's now batting .308 with an .843 OPS, but it's kind of empty. He's got 6 home runs. Can we depend on him for a little bit more power? I'm not so sure. Obviously, he's still young and he can grow into that power eventually, but there's not really anything in the underlying numbers that support Andrew Vaughn hitting for more power now, at least. Chris, if you play in shallower leagues, let's say, you know, 3 outfielder leagues, Andrew Vaughn or Christopher Morel, who do you like more?
This might be a points versus roto thing, because I do think Vaughn, you know, he's going to strike out less. He's probably going to have, he's definitely going to have fewer stolen bases. So I think it might just be Vaughn in a points league, Morel in a roto league. Morel is also, is he second base eligible?
Yep.
Yeah, second and third base eligible, I think. So
Morel's second and outfield.
Just second, okay. But, you know, if you have to pick between one of them, that might be enough of a tiebreaker. But I'm pretty happy with what we've seen from Andrew Vaughn so far. I mean, consider the hype that was around him last season and consider the fact that he's now got an .843 OPS in a way that doesn't seem particularly fluky. I mean, he's overperforming his expected stats a little bit, but, you know, within that, there's the potential for him to hit for more power than he has been so far. So, I don't know. I still want to have Vaughn around.
Fair enough. Scott, Vaughn versus Morel.
You know, I might lean Morel and Roto because there's stolen base potential there, and it seems like plus stolen base potential, not just I'm going to give you a handful of stolen bases. Like, he could give you a lot of steals if he keeps the job, which is a big if. By the way, I had a chance to look up Harris, the batted ball metrics over the past week. Anyway, they are significantly better. I would imagine after today's game, up over 90 miles per hour on the average exit velocity, and the launch angle has about doubled. So it's just a week, but, you know, he's been in the majors all of what, 3 weeks?
We don't have to spend too much time on this one, but for our 15-team leagues out there, Nomar Mazara quietly hitting .344. He had 2 more hits on Tuesday. And Orlando Arcia, who will now be filling in for Ozzie Albies with the Braves, he hit his second home run. He's batting .327, only 61 plate appearances. 94 mile per hour average exit velocity. I thought that was very interesting. Scott, deeper leagues, Mazara or Orlando Arcia?
That's how you know the Braves are going well. They lose their all-star second baseman and the guy who replaces him immediately comes in and has a big game. You know, I am kind of interested in Arcia. Mazara did have good numbers at AAA. He's come up and hit mostly just singles so far, which was kind of his MO during previous stints in the majors. Arcia, you know, he's had multiple years where he's been a major league starter and contributed basically nothing too. Now, he did hit 17 home runs in about half a season's at bats at AAA last year, which was interesting. And you point out his Statcast numbers this year, obviously over a very small sample. But I think just maybe for longevity reasons, since, you know, obviously he's going to be in the lineup for a couple months, the Braves really have no other choice. And eligibility reasons and being multi-eligible, I think I might opt for Arcia over Mazzara.
All right, Chris, what do you think? Arcia versus Mazzara, deeper leagues?
Yeah, I would go with Arcia. Mazzara is like young Eric Hosmer. That might be too generous to him.
You know what's crazy? I think Mazzara is just like 27 years old. It just feels like he's been around for like two decades now. I don't know.
He was a guy fantasy analyst couldn't quit on.
No, he just kept not doing, like, he had the 100 RBI season, but like, yeah, he just kept being like the 80th player drafted for like 4 years in a row, and it never worked out.
No, it did not. All right, so we're taking Orlando Arcia over Nomar Mazzara. Before we hit the break, just to remind everybody that if you are listening to us on Spotify, you can drop a 5-star rating, much appreciated. If you're listening on Apple, you could do the same thing. You can drop a question in the Apple Podcast review or a team name Tuesday, and we will read it on an upcoming podcast. Let's take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The news and notes. Fernando Tatis's CT scan on his wrist Monday didn't reveal the desired level of healing, so his expected return date has been pushed back. He's been limited to running and fielding grounders, but alas, remains without a timetable. So, not great for our guy, Fernando Tatis. Max Scherzer will throw a simulated game on Thursday. His oblique injury is reportedly feeling better following a recent PRP injection. So, all right, we could be
love that platelet-rich plasma.
Yeah.
It's my favorite kind of plasma.
Can't get enough of it. I drink a glass before bed every night.
Ah, you sure you want to do that, Chris? Jacob DeGrom, his teammate.
Morbid time.
Jacob DeGrom will progress to an quote, up and down bullpen session. I truly have no idea.
I would assume that's to simulate like an inning and then an inning.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more to
he's replicate. Behind Scherzer is what I saw today.
Yeah, basically.
Isn't Scherzer ramping up much earlier than expected? It doesn't feel like he's been gone that long.
It does feel like that, yeah.
It's because of that PRP. Like, I don't know. The first thing I heard of it was today, and it's like, oh, he's feeling all better because he got this PRP injection. So
take PRP, you'll BRB.
Let's hope so. I've
got that slurp juice.
I need. What did you just say?
it's an internet joke.
Yeah, you know me. I try to stay off the internet as much as possible. Jack Flaherty will make his season debut on Wednesday against the Pirates. He's made two rehab starts, but has only been built up to 58 pitches. I would imagine they're pretty cautious early on here, so maybe we get like 70, 75
pitches. Yeah, the note I saw was that he says he feels better and his pitches are better than they've been in like the last couple of years, and that was why they decided to bring him up quicker than expected. So that's a good sign.
Sure is. I wish they told us before the week started so we could get him in the lineup against the Pirates. That would
he's also said he had a chance to work through some like mechanical issues that had sprung up last year when he was dealing with whatever injury he was dealing with then.
Yeah.
Jack Flaherty, by the way.
I think it was an oblique last year for Flaherty that kept him out for like 2 months. And then when he came back, he was like a shell of himself. Brandon,
yeah, and he said during the offseason, this thing was like, sorry, Frank.
It's all good.
But that the
Flaherty says a lot of things.
I mean, he does have a tendency to say things. but in this particular instance, he said that the shoulder this spring was a result of changing his mechanics because of the oblique, I believe.
And
one more. Sorry.
It would not surprise me. Brandon Woodruff was able to throw a few breaking balls during a 40-pitch bullpen session on Tuesday. Woodruff recently felt numbness in his fingers associated with Raynaud's syndrome, and he said he's been on medicine and has noticed daily improvement with gripping the ball. So still pretty scary for Brandon Woodruff.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, some good news there. Liam Hendricks was placed on the IL with a right forearm strain, which sounds pretty concerning. Yesterday they said it was arm stiffness, but it turns out to be a forearm injury. Kendall Graveman looks like the next man up and is just 15% rostered. Scott, how does Graveman stack up against Tanner Scott, Tanner Houck, and even Diego Castillo, who's getting saves recently for the Mariners?
Well, first I want to point out that the White Sox did say initial timetable is 3 weeks.
Okay.
I could see how it could end up getting extended from there with a forearm strain.
But they said it doesn't sound all that grave, man.
Yeah, that is what they said. If we knew it was a 6 to 8 week injury, I might go Graveman ahead of most of these guys, but because they're at least making it out to be a short-term injury, I think I would take both Tanner Scott, who got another save here on Tuesday, and Tanner Houck over Graveman.
All right, fair enough. Chris, you're on fire today, by the way, so keep it up. Gold star for you. Ozzie Albies was placed on the 60-day IL with the fractured left foot. A timeline won't become available until a decision is made regarding surgery. Tim Anderson began a rehab assignment on Tuesday and should rejoin the White Sox at some point during their upcoming homestand, which begins on June 20th. Pablo Lopez will not start on Wednesday as originally hoped and remains day-to-day with a wrist contusion. The hope is for him to make a start this weekend against the Mets. Chris Sale will throw live batting practices or simulated games during the Red Sox's homestand through June 22nd before potentially heading out on a minor league rehab assignment.
He had a wild quote in talking about the health scare that delayed his recovery. I believe the quote was something like, but thankfully I made it through, or if you ask some people, I guess not so thankfully. It was a really weird quote.
Yeah,
implying that some people wish Chris Sale was not healthy. It was a bizarre. Chris Sale also be saying things.
Yeah, who would not want him healthy? Who's he talking about? I don't know.
He's got kind of like a persecution complex, I feel like.
All right. Yeah, I know he
has a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah,
this
is several.
Didn't he cut up jerseys, like, I don't know, 6 years ago, something crazy like that?
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't allow... Oh, no, that was a different... He wanted to be traded because they wouldn't allow Adam LaRoche's son, Drake, to hang out in their locker room. Also, another classic Chris Sale.
Very weird. Anyway, the Red Sox pitching coach, Dave Bush, said, ideally, Sale will be back as a starter. Freddy Peralta was transferred to the 60-day IL, which ensures he will be sidelined through the All-Star break. Juan Soto out of the lineup with right knee soreness, but expects to return on Wednesday. Jeremy Pena out of the lineup after suffering a left wrist injury on Monday. He's day-to-day. Trey Mancini is dealing with a right hand injury, hopes to return in the next 2 to 3 days. Sonny Gray will make his return on Wednesday, start against the Mariners. Steven Strasburg placed on a 15-day IL Monday, and it turns out he's dealing with a stress reaction of his ribs. Hyunjin Ryu will undergo season-ending surgery to address UCL damage in his left elbow.
Another case of a guy whose production mysteriously fades and we don't know why. And then all of a sudden he's having Tommy John. Yes. Happens a lot.
It is
lot. Concerning.
Weird. All right, let's fire up the worryometer, get through some of these names. And a few hitters we keep getting questions about. Jesse Winker went, he's batting 208, which is 4 home runs on the season, a 622 OPS, more fly balls and infield fly balls. The hard contact is down quite a bit for Jesse Winker. Scott, where are you at? The worryometer on Winker, maybe consider dropping him anywhere?
Yeah, I'd consider dropping him in any three outfielder league, I would say. Worryometer, I'll go 9. Pretty high.
Damn. All right, fair enough. Yeah,
I don't disagree, but I also feel like he's gonna, like, it feels like his swing is just a little bit out of whack. Like, he's just hitting a lot more fly, a lot more balls in the air, a lot more pop-ups in a way that, like, I feel like he's probably just a tweak away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, new team, yeah. New league, take obviously pretty big adjustment period, but
as we talked about in the preseason when talking about him, he's a guy who very easily could get sat against lefties permanently, in which case would limit his opportunities to turn things around as well.
So I don't get it, Chris. Are you worried about him or not worried about him?
Yes.
Okay. Alex Bregman.
Chris sounds like a solid 5.
Yeah. Chris right there, a little flip-flop right in the middle.
If I have him, but trying to buy.
Okay.
Alex, if I don't.
Alex Bregman, are we looking to buy him? He's batting 218 with 6 home runs. He does have more walks than strikeouts, which you like to see in OBP and points league formats. But he... It seems like he's trying to hit the ball in the air more, maybe trying to make up for his lack of hard contact by just volume, putting the ball in the air a lot, but he hasn't been great. Chris, what do you think? Worryometer on Alex Bregman.
This is another one where I'm worried-ish, but still looking to buy, because I do think... Like, his barrel rate's up higher than it's been since 2018. It's still not exceptional, but it's still pretty good. You know, he's still pulling the ball a lot, which, given his limited power, is, I think, a good thing. So, all in all, I think Alex Bregman's going to be better than he has been. Since he's not going to be a superstar, though. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
Since the start of the shortened 2020 season, he is batting .250. With a 764 OPS that was entering Tuesday's action. I don't know, Scott. Maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe this is unfair to say. Bregman kind of feels jaggy. Kind of feels like he's just a guy now.
Well, what is worrying about Alex Bregman look like? It's not like he was a second round pick this year. Yeah. He was, I mean, like a 7th round pick this year?
People were relying on him to be their starting third baseman. And I think from that perspective...
And I think they still should. I think he's clearly one of the top 7 or 8 at the position, even though his numbers since April have been pretty bad. His plate discipline, like, he is... like, chase rate, 100%. He's the best chase rate guy in baseball. And that's still, like, it's so superlative that... You know, even if he's a 15 to 20 homer guy now, I think it's going to play up. Obviously, deep lineup, all of that. I think he's fine. I'll go like 4 on the worryometer for Bregman, and that's somebody I'd definitely be willing to buy on.
All right, let's move over to Adley Rutschman, who has not done much, as we've seen with many prospects who get the call, and he's batting .176. He's got 0 homers through his first 20 games. Is hitting a lot of line drives and hitting the ball decently hard. Scott, what do you think? Worryometer on Rutschman.
Well, from a dynasty perspective, 0. Let's address that first.
Yep.
I haven't been motivated to move him down in my rankings from 7th, where I initially slotted him a catcher when he got called up. I think maybe I moved Alejandro Kirk past him since then. But, yeah, I mean, I still think he's going to just, I mean, you look at the batted ball metrics, like it's hard to see him not becoming a top 10 guy rest of way. Where does he fit in with other guys like MJ Melendez and Mitch Garver, who's sure to come back from his IL stint soon. And I don't know, who's somebody else? You got the Braves duo. Where does he fit in with them? I mean, if one of them's out there, I could understand dropping Rutschman for them. I personally don't think I would do it.
All right, let's move over to Trevor Rogers. You will get Trevor Rogers, Chris. I swear it's not a Marlins thing, but he failed to complete four innings for the third time this season, I believe. Yeah, third time. And he gave up four runs over 3 2/3. He had six walks at the Phillies. Just really did not have anything. 18% CSW overall. It's quite bad for Trevor Rogers. The nightmare season continues. So let's switch over to the drop-o-meter, Chris. 1 to 10. 10 being he's absolutely droppable anywhere. What do you think about Trevor Rogers in season-long leagues?
I think he's probably like a 7 or 8 on the drop-o-meter. I've wanted to remain optimistic about him because I still believe in the stuff, but it just hasn't been effective. It's hard because if you look at the, you know, a lot of the underlying stuff metrics still look the same. Like the velocity is pretty much what it was last season. The spin rate, largely the same. Extension, you know, release point is, I think, mostly similar. I think I did see there were some changes in his release point, his fastball. Movement profile has changed a little bit, but like he doesn't look like a terribly different pitcher than he did last season. So I still think there's room for him to figure something out, but there's just nothing to be optimistic about right now besides the fact that he was good last season.
I mean, I was pretty bummed. I was getting optimistic. I actually wrote, you know, kind of a starting pitcher stock watch piece that went up on Tuesday, and I had Trevor Rogers as one of the risers because I looked at the two starts. Last three starts, the middle one was at Coors Field. Took that out because it's Coors Field and it was bad. But the other two starts, his changeup was playing a lot more like it did last year. He actually had a 50% whiff rate on the changeup in the start prior to this one. And that was the pitch that just wasn't right for him at the start of the year. It's supposed to be his best pitch and it wasn't doing much. Early on, it was back to not doing anything in this start. He got one swinging strike on it. Jeez. And so my faith is diminished. And he's already been dropped in a lot of leagues. I wouldn't blame anybody for dropping him in anything shallower than 15 teams at this point. It's probably up there with Winker as a maybe like an 8 on the worryometer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I was looking at, I saw somebody reference this on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. I'm sorry, but his release point has been steadily dropping since last season. And so, you know, there could be something there. Like, it's the kind of thing where I think there could be just like a small tweak that could help him figure it out. But it's just not there right now.
The last one on the list is a reliever. Corey Knebel entered in a one-run game, and he was charged with 3 unearned runs. He takes his 4th blown save and 5th loss. The 9th inning actually started with an error made by Alec Bohm. 2 more walks allowed by Corey Knebel. His walks per 9, 5.8 so far this season. He's been, the ERA has been fortunate. Still low 3s, but overall, I don't know, kind of worried. Scott, what do you think? 1 to 10, Corey Knebel.
I mean, to get a start like this, the ERA didn't go up at all. It actually went down because of that error.
That's fair.
But clearly, Knebel didn't pitch well. And I would say worryometer for him is probably like an 8 as well. I mean, Sir Anthony Dominguez, I think, is the top prospective closer to pick up and stash. Now, he allowed a home run in this game himself, actually blew the lead on it. But his overall numbers have been incredible. And he has closing experience, got 16 saves in 2018.
All right. Would you, Scott, drop Corey Knebel for any of the names we mentioned earlier, like either of the Tanners, maybe Kendall Graveman?
No.
No?
No. I mean, there's a certain amount of volatility baked in at closer, so even though Knebel looks like he's on the rocks right now, I mean, Tanner Scott is on the rocks too, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd stick with Knebel.
All right, let's move into some leftovers from Tuesday's action. A light night for waiver wire pitchers, but a few names that stood out to me. I don't think there's anything here yet, but I'll point out that Kyle Hendricks had 14 swinging strikes on 78 pitches over five innings pitched against the Padres, and he threw his changeup a season-high 40%, and it's far and away his best whiff pitch, so just something to watch for now. 61% rostered is Kyle Hendricks. Some other names, Dane Dunning gets back on track with a scoreless outing against the Astros, six shutout innings with four strikeouts there, and then Zach Davies. That's right. That's Zach Davies. He has now tossed three quality starts in a row. He goes seven shutout with seven strikeouts to zero walks. His ERA down to 3.78. Chris, what do you think about these three names? Kyle Hendricks, Dane Dunning, Zach Davies.
Yeah, we've seen a handful of starts from Hendricks this season where he's thrown the changeup more and gotten whiffs with it, but it hasn't been a consistent thing, and his control just hasn't been very good this season. So I'm still largely fading. You know, I think even 61% rostered is probably too high. So, yeah, and I think he's the most interesting of this group. There's some interesting things about Dunning with the ground ball rate, but I just don't think he gets enough swing and misses.
Yeah, I like the slider changeup, the two secondaries for Dane Dunning, but his fastball is just so soft. I think it's like 88, 89 yeah. miles per hour. I don't think there's enough there for him to overcome that. Some pitching bounce backs. Go ahead, Scott.
I think Kyle Hendricks basically is, to bring up the third one, I think Kyle Hendricks basically is Zach Davies now. That's kind of the Spider-Man meme. Like they'll occasionally have games where their changeup looks like a world beater and they get a lot of whiffs with it, but usually not. That's where both of them are right now.
Hey, all I'm asking for is three, four good starts in a row from Kyle Hendricks, and then maybe I could flip him for something in the Scott White Dynasty League. That's all I need. Three or four starts from Kyle Hendricks. See what happens. Pitching bounce backs off of recent rough starts. Gerrit Cole back on track after allowing five homers in his previous start. He goes six shutout with seven strikeouts against the Tampa Bay Rays. Dylan Cease, five innings of one-run ball with eight strikeouts, only one walk. That was his second start the season with one walk or fewer. And then Chris Bassitt, a huge start against the Brewers, eight shutout innings, three hits, one walk, seven strikeouts. I hope you left him in there for the two-star week. Both of our guys told you to do that on last week's Friday podcast. Scott, what do you think about
I had him as a must-start in my two-star pitcher rankings, and somebody called me out for it on Twitter.
Well, you called them random out
guy,
now.
Random guy on Twitter.
Take that.
Let him get under my skin.
Look first name, bunch of numbers.
Yeah. Listen to Scott. Don't listen to me because I benched him in the podcast points league.
Well, here's the thing. Three of four quality starts now for Bassitt. He did have two really bad starts. So if you look at, if you just do a monthly breakdown of Bassitt, oh, look at that terrible May ERA. Oh, look at that terrible June ERA. It's basically the fault of two starts. So, you know, he actually has a career best swinging strike rate, a career best xFIP. Granted, neither are very good, but that's kind of the point. Like, they've never been good for Chris Bassitt, and Look at the kind of pitcher he's been the past couple years.
Yeah, fair enough on Chris Bassitt. I did want to point out Zach Eflin was also a two-star pitcher this week, and he got off to a very rough start against the Marlins, and then he settled down. I think it was six innings, four runs. I will just mention the Marlins against right-handed pitching this season, sixth best weighted on base average. So they're not as bad as they have been in years past. I'm pretty sure that they are awful against lefties, like the
worst.
They're
one of the worst in baseball against lefties. Keep sitting Jazz Chisholm, though. That'll fix it.
Right.
Also, Garrett Cooper, I don't know if we've mentioned him on the podcast.
He's pretty good.
He's been awesome.
Yeah.
He's probably under rostered.
Yeah, I think I saw that. I think it's
he's like in like the 30% range.
Sub 30, yeah, something like that. It is
840 OPS.
33%.
And the underlying numbers are very good.
33% roster for Garrett Cooper. He's first and outfield eligible. All right, a few other pitching leftovers. Let's kind of just run through these. Corey Kluber continues to be serviceable. Six innings of two-run ball there. Both runs were unearned. Nick Pivetta continues this awesome stretch that he's on right now. Eight innings of one-run ball. His last eight starts, he's got a 1.83 ERA. I'm not exactly sure how he's doing it, but he's doing it. That's Nick Pivetta.
Sell.
Joe Ryan made his return
sell
to the mound.
For whatever you can get.
Joe Ryan made his return. He gave up four runs over four and two-thirds. He also allowed two home runs in a start for the first time this season. Logan Gilbert on the other side, he made it six straight quality starts. He goes six shutout with six strikeouts. Chris, anything to add outside of sell Nick Pivetta?
Yes, sell Nick Pivetta. And Logan Gilbert, it's so weird because he just doesn't really get a lot of swings and misses. And we've talked about this in the past. So he's got this like pretty pedestrian swinging strike rate.
It's gone up a lot lately for Gilbert. Yeah. That was another guy I wrote about in my pitcher stock watch piece. He's kind of started introducing a curveball, and it's not a very effective pitch on its own, but it's made the slider more effective the way he's playing off of them.
I mean, he had a 36% whiff rate with the slider today, which is pretty good. But the thing with him is he gets a lot of foul balls. And this is something that I've talked about with him, where he has this like middling swinging strike rate and middling CSW, but he gets a lot of strikes that way in a way that could be sustainable.
All right, fair enough. That is Logan Gilbert. And let's move into some hitting leftovers. Wilson Contreras, a double dong, two more home runs for him. I believe he's now up to 11 homers. Should Wilson Contreras be our number one ranked catcher? I guess it's similar to like Goldschmidt and Freddie Freeman, but I've thought about it. Contreras versus Salvador Perez. What do you think?
I think it ultimately comes down to how much you believe in Salvador Perez. I still have a lot of confidence in him being closer to the guy we saw last year than not. And, you know, since he complained about his thumb the other day, his production has he's picked it up at the plate again. So, no, I am not ready to bail on Salvador Perez, and that's what moving Wilson Contreras over him would suggest. So I'm fine with Contreras number two, but I'll still take Perez over him.
What was that, Chris?
I've got him number two, but yeah, number one, I don't know. Like, he's going to slow down at some point, but he kind of looks like Salvador Perez did last year. Like, the underlying numbers are really, really good for Wilson Contreras, along with, obviously, the 954 OPS, but he's 99th percentile in max exit velo, hard hit rate, 97th in average exit velo. Like, he looks like the way he's hitting right now is an elite hitter. I don't think he can keep it up, but very impressive.
The universal DH has helped him. It's also a contract year, so I respect it. Get paid, Wilson Contreras. Rhys Hoskins went 4-for-5 with a double dong, added six RBI. He is heating up in June. 354 batting average, five homers, 12 RBI, and 1196 OPS in 12 June games for Rhys Hoskins. Rafael Devers hit his 15th home run. Matt Chapman went 2-for-4, hit his eighth homer. Gabriel Moreno, we'll take this for sure, 3-for-4 with two RBI. He's 56% rostered if you lost Tyler Stevenson and need a catcher. Ryan Mountcastle went 3-for-5 with two doubles and hit his 10th home run. He's doing some interesting things too. 28% line drive rate, career high 92 mile per hour average exit velocity, and also a career high 13.9% barrel rate, which I assume will go up after Tuesday's action. Scott, I know that we were all kind of collectively skeptical on Ryan Mountcastle, but what do you think about this start to his season, I guess?
Well, the batted ball profile has improved quite a bit from a year ago. In fact, StatCast suggests he should be an absolute monster. That's how hard he's impacting the ball. His expected stats are 310 for the batting average, 577 for the slugging percentage. And obviously the actual stats are nowhere near that. The actual stats are pretty much in line with last year. So I wonder how much of that has to do with the changed environment. Obviously the changed dimensions also in his home park.
I think both have a lot to do with it.
Yeah. So, you know, I may be wrong about Ryan Mountcastle being a bust because of those factors, because like he may have improved to the point that he can actually live up to those numbers. I still say, kind of like Chris was saying for Contreras, it's more likely he just kind of cools off from here with the exit velocity and hard hit rate.
The thing that concerns me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is that the numbers look like they did last year, and I don't buy the underlying numbers.
That is Ryan Mountcastle. AJ Pollock now has 6 straight multi-hit games, just not really any power during that stretch. Jake Cronenworth went 3-for-4 on Tuesday, and in the month of June, he's batting .340 with 3 homers, 5 doubles, 18 RBI in 14 games. So you like to see that for a Cronenworth. Tommy Edman went 3-for-5 in game 2 with his 7th home run, and another win for the Braves, as I mentioned earlier, 5 homers, 1 from Michael Harris, 1 from Orlando Arcia, but also Ozuna, Swanson, and Travis d'Arnaud also got in on the action. The call to the bullpen will start with the Yankees. Clay Holmes struck out 2 for his 10th save. The Astros, Ryan Pressly gave up 2 hits but picked up his 12th save. For the Marlins, Tanner Scott allowed a hit, picked up his 5th save. He's 29% rostered. For the Orioles, Jorge Lopez recorded the final 5 outs for his 9th save. He's 57% rostered. There's a good amount of relievers that can provide saves on the waiver wire, or at least it seems that way. For Cleveland, Emmanuel Class A picks up his 12th save of the season. Cincinnati was just an absolute mess following Tyler Mahle. It was Alexis Diaz and Luis Sessa each blew the save, and then someone named Joel Cunell picks up his first save of the season. So,
but that's interesting that now, well, I guess not back-to-back appearance, because that Hunter Strickland save when Alexis Diaz wasn't available. But we saw, my point is, Alexis Diaz, we saw him handled like a closer on Sunday, I believe it was. And he got the save. He gave up a couple runs, but he got the save. And then we saw him used as a closer here on Tuesday when he was rested enough to be used as a closer again. I'm not sure I have those dates exactly right. There was a Hunter Strickland save in between when Diaz wasn't available. But the point is, it seems like maybe the Reds are leaning toward Diaz in that role. Of course, he has to get the job done for that to keep happening.
Yeah, I think he's been their best reliever all season.
Oh, clearly.
I mean, even with this outing, 2.40 ERA, nearly a 16% swinging strike rate. He does walk too many. This is Alexis Diaz and flyball pitcher, so not the best combination for a closer, but he's got good stuff.
It was just the one ghost runner that he allowed in, right?
Right, yeah. So
I would expect a manager wouldn't hold that against him, but could be wrong about that.
You never know with the Reds. The San Francisco Giants, Camilo Duvall picked up his 9th save, and he has now pitched a 9th inning 2 days in a row. So, boom, Kapler, take that. To stream or not to stream, let's start with Wednesday. Kyle Gibson versus the Marlins, Alex Faedo versus the White Sox, Spencer Strider. I feel like we've talked about Spencer Strider like 3 days in a row. Maybe we have.
Yeah, he's way under rostered.
Spencer Strider's at Washington. Rich Hill versus the A's. Andre Pallante will not be starting, so forget about him. And Roansy Contreras at the Cardinals.
Spencer Strider.
Yeah.
Strider's the clear outlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and I'd be fine with Kyle Gibson or Alex Faedo, too.
I don't know, Scott. Those Marlins, they're hitting the righties well. All right. And then Thursday, here's my analysis. Skip Thursday. There's nothing on Thursday.
Just go outside.
So we're going to wrap there. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property, it's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.